Welcome to a Moray House Trust podcast. Moray House Trust is a private non-profit based in Georgetown and dedicated to promoting Guyanese culture. This podcast is part of our 1763 series. We hope you enjoy it.
The following extract from the book Blood of the River, a chronicle of mutiny and freedom on the wild coast by Marjolaine Kars, is being presented with the kind permission of the author and is read by Russell Lancaster. Ruling. As they expanded their grip on the colony, and even before the Dutch fled to the coast, Coffige and his next-in-command, Acara, formed a government. They expanded on the rudimentary organization they had set up in the first weeks of the rebellion, drawing on Akan and New World political understanding and practices. Coffige set policy and headed up the civil administration. He upgraded his title from captain, as he designated himself in his first message to Governor Van Hoogenheim, to governor. Captain Acara was in charge of military affairs. Separation of political and military affairs was common practice, too, among Maroons in Suriname and elsewhere. Coffige picked councilmen, a prosecutor, and an executioner. They, like Governor Coffige, were known by the Dutch terms for their offices. They were given servants, chosen from both the rebellion's opponents and its supporters. They added ceremony. High-ranking officials and their wives dressed in fancy European clothing and jewelry to symbolize their new authority, power, and status. Their comings and goings were announced with drumming and gunshots. Some were given the tent boats of plantation owners. Berend, the bomber on Sublislust, was ferried about like a hare, or big man, in the boat of Councilman Abinsetz, rowed by some of Abinsetz's former slaves. Rebel leaders selected Herren, lords, trusted supporters to run the plantations that the rebels decided to keep in production and to ensure that plantation workers stayed at their jobs. Much as bombers had been beholden to their European masters, Herren were obligated to Coffige and to the rebellion's success if they wanted to keep their new positions. Others were encouraged or forced to work at their previous occupations, but now to aid the rebellion. Governor Coffige ordered Jan Kat, a former colony slave trained as a smith, to make arrows with metal points and to drill open any cannon the Dutch had spiked. Others worked as carpenters, masons, and cooks. On the military side, Captain Acara designated captains and lieutenants to train and lead army units. No doubt, some were chosen because of their wartime experience in Africa. Poco van Hollandia, an Amina for instance, knew how to command with flags, meaning that he used signals to direct soldiers in battle. Others were promoted because they proved their mettle in the early stages of the rebellion. Gusari van Osterlijk led the uprising on his plantation and was also in charge during the attack on Pierboom plantation in the first week of the rebellion. Entrusting these men and others to lead their own bands tied them to the rebellion. While the great majority of leaders were male, a few female councillors exerted crucial leadership early in the rebellion. Their roles reflected old and new world practices. Among the Akan, female councillors served as social critics who helped regulate people's behavior. On plantations, senior women played important roles in informal slave tribunals that dealt with community infractions such as theft, sexual transgressions, and accusations of poisoning. No doubt drawing on such customs, Amelia van Hollandia and Zeelandia, Coffige's sister from the Middle Passage, was said to have counseled him about people's loyalty. Other rebels, later charged and questioned by the Dutch, claimed that at the word of this powerful woman, heads rolled. She defended herself against such claims by asserting that she had merely served as Kofiji's cook. As on the Gold Coast, a wife's duty to cook for her husband was of great importance, second only to bearing his children. Amelia, in fact, may well have been one of Kofiji's wives. As the rebellion progressed and war eclipsed governing, the sources no longer identify women in leadership roles. The rebellion provided men with many opportunities for social mobility and prestige as soldiers and leaders, opportunities from which women were largely excluded. In addition to creating civil and military administrations, Kofij and Akara also stockpiled and distributed supplies. Kofij redistributed supplies to the army and loyal followers or kept them for future use. Rebel leaders also made a careful inventory of what and who remained on the various plantations. As one might expect in wartime, the bulk of the supplies went to the army. Kofij and Akara handed out the estimated 300 to 400 guns they had collected to their most trusted and capable men. No records indicate that women received guns. Some rebels, such as bomber Claes van Petit Bretin, did not know how to handle a gun. He and men like him were given sharp tools like axes for hand-to-hand combat. Archers relied on skills they brought from their home countries. Governor Kofij had iron-tipped arrows made for them, but as in the pre-colonial Akan kingdom of Asante in West Africa, the powerful carried guns. This was an extract from the book Blood of the River, a chronicle of mutiny and freedom on the Wild Coast by Marjolaine Kars. It was read by Russell Lancaster.
This was a Moray House Trust podcast. Thank you very much for listening.